And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Mike Gregg. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to look back at the 2-2 draw for Fulham against Norwich City Tuesday night at Craven Cottage. We'll also be answering your questions in Ask the Co-host for Mike. Later on, we'll be previewing the match Saturday at Villa Park for Fulham against Aston Villa. We have a ton to talk about in this episode, but before we do anything, always have to welcome my co-host back to the show. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing well, and it's been a good week so far following the show last Friday where we sort of set a target. So looking forward to talking about the Villa game and Norwich game as well, and let's see if we can keep in touch with that top six and, if not, you know, be there at the end of tomorrow.
Absolutely, Mike. And listen, the Mike Gregg hat trick, unfortunately, is out of play, but I'll take a victory on Saturday.
Yeah, I wanted 3 wins, but a win and a draw, I think we all would have taken that this time last week.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, let's talk about the match Tuesday night. Very interesting match. There's a good amount to get through while we go through it. You know, obviously we're going to go through both halves, look at the stats, look at everything else. But obviously, let's start with your opening thoughts on the match. Before I get them, I just want to mention this because before I did this show, I actually watched a video from Stefan Johansson talking about the match, and he was talking about, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, about character. And it's funny, Mike, because when I saw the word character, that's what I have in my mind now when I think about this match, that this was a character point, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we go back to Monday's show, which we did with Yanis, we were talking about after the win on Saturday, Norwich was always going to be a hard game. And, you know, I think I predicted a draw. I think you predicted a win, or I may have said a loss even. But whatever way we were looking at it, it was going to be a tough game. And for me, it was, let's have a performance of some kind. Let's not see last Saturday as a flash in the pan after the international break, you know, and can we compete with these teams? And, you know, you come out of the Norwich game, it's a 2-2 after being 2 down, 2 silly penalties really given away. But, you know, the vast majority of Fulham fans should have come away from Tuesday night thinking they have character, they have determination, must be a great team spirit as well. And we can compete with these top teams. I mean, we have now played the teams in first and second place. We've beaten one and drawn one at home. And it seems almost as if we're better against teams that want to come and play football, play against us, instead of those that sit back. So we've got a hard run coming up. You look at the fixtures, you know, lots of teams in the top 10. But if they are footballing teams, I think at the moment you'd have to say we can give them all a good game and we shouldn't be too worried about playing them. It's almost as if you look at the bottom of the table and that's where we get worried, you know, because these teams just sit back and we're finding trouble sort of breaking them down at the moment.
It's interesting, Mike. I'm glad that you brought that up, talking about teams that want to play against us, want to play football. You saw that in this match. And the one thing that stood out to me before we really break down this match is especially in the second half when I watched the replay, In that spell when we were dominant, we were first to the ball all the time. And that was a big part of the reason why we kept them in their end, is that we were determined to get the ball to play. And that is what stood out to me, Mike, was the determination. And that's why we're talking about it being a character point. That's the reason why I wanted to bring that up. I think it's a character point because you're down 2-0. And they basically willed their way with determination and skill to get back in the match and give themselves a chance to win the match.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can look back and, we usually break these games down into first and second halves. But, you know, let's talk about the second half where, you know, for 20 minutes, I went and had a look at some stats and that. And for 20 minutes, from the 50th minute to the 70th minute, that was a period we scored 2 goals when we were right on top of them. 70% of the game, so we're not talking possession, we're talking, you know, of the game, was in the Norwich half. That's how dominant we were. And, you know, you can't expect that all game. And we certainly tired, as the game went on. And for me, we maybe could have made another substitution a little bit earlier just to, you know, ease things a little bit. But as soon as you got to 2-2, you know, you did feel, yeah, you know, we can get a third here. We can win this. And but in the end, you know, we all settled for the draw. But that 20 minutes for me showed that we can compete with these top teams, put them on the back foot. We have got the skill to dominate games and finish as well, which is, you know, let's remember, we let 2 goals in on Tuesday, but they were both penalties. You know,
that's
okay,
right.
It's not a clean sheet, but we haven't let a goal in from open play in that, you know, in that game. And we spoke offline about this yesterday, Russ, and, you know, again, looking at facts and figures, off the sort of cuff, I said we're 10% short of being a good team. And there is, you know, a couple of websites, a couple of bloggers out there who do the sort of expected goals and, you know, for and against. And I've had a look at that. And we're about 10% short. So attacking wise, you know, we just need to be that little bit more clinical, just that extra point clinical. So that's about 10%. And likewise, defensively, we need to reduce the number of shots against us just by 1 or 2 a game on average.
That's right.
And we make that 10% up, and then we become level with those teams who are in the top 6. So, you know, there's lots of comments about we're not good enough, we should just look at staying up. I truly believe Tuesday showed that we can compete. It's going to take a hell of a lot of effort because we're lacking that little bit extra of skill or, you know, team ability, whatever way you want to look at it. But we can compete, and we need to work every game to, you know, fight and get those points. It's not going to come easy. The ability is there, and we should be looking to be in this top 6, top 8 for the, certainly up till January. That, you know, that needs to be our target. So, very buoyed by Tuesday, considering, you know, I expect Norwich to be in the top 2 come the end of the season. And we made them at times look quite ordinary. At other times, they showed why they're in that position. Very early on, free headers and Houlihan, all the guys we spoke about Monday night, they are all dangerous. But for the vast majority of the game, we coped very, very well with them.
Yeah, Mike, definitely. And let me ask you before we go on, the matches that you've been to this season, was that 20-minute spell the best you've seen so far this season, or was there another time that stood out more than this one?
No, I'd definitely say that 20 minutes was the best sustained pressure against one team that we have shown this year. I'm not necessarily going to say it's the best football we played, but it's certainly, you know, determination, every player looking and fighting for every ball. I mean, you've got Johansson and Pearson, who have both made a hell of a lot of difference to the team.
Absolutely.
In their work rate and willingness to chase lost causes. And, you know, so you're looking at Martin up top, and everyone goes on about strikers need to close. But actually what you're seeing is, how many games recently have we seen Pearson pressure a player and then win the ball because he's done that? And same with Johansson. He played much more advanced the other day. But, you know, he's shown his ability that he showed in his first couple of appearances, which were very mixed. But you can see why Ivkanovic wanted him. He's obviously fighting, you know, for every ball that's out there. And I have to say, at the end of the game, he took his top off and gave it to somebody in the crowd. And I don't think the guy has an ounce of fat on him at all. I mean, he... you know, as thin as a rake, if you like, or certainly below that 5 or 6% fat rate. I mean, I couldn't believe how fit he looked, but he needed it. He showed it. You know, God knows. You know, I'd love to know how many miles he ran on Tuesday.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. All right. Let's get into this. Let's start with the starting 11. Let's start here because I'm curious what was going through your mind when you saw it. I know what was going on through my mind. I looked at it. The first thing that stood out to me was McDonald and Parker together, Mike. That was the first thing that stood out. But then I saw something interesting. I saw Johansson in there. I'm like, okay, he's taking the place of Kearney. And then I looked at the back line and I saw Ream was still in there. So there were some very interesting decisions that were made by Slavica going into the match. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? Were you concerned when you saw Parker and McDonald together?
Yeah, I was, and I did tweet sigh, you know, when I saw Parker and McDonald together. I have to say, despite everything that we watched on Tuesday, I'm still not convinced that those two together should be an option at home. You know, I think Johansson showed stuff that he could offer. But I thought we played slightly different, and I spoke to our co-host David Hulley earlier on today, and he agreed with me. You saw McDonald actually sitting, if you like, in front of the two centre-backs, and then Parker and Johansson almost in front of him. So it was almost like an inverted pyramid with...
Well,
you know, sort of with McDonald at the bottom tip, if you like, an upside-down pyramid, and then Parker and Johansson in front of him. And that's almost what it looked like. I think it slightly changed as the game went on. But, I wasn't overly impressed by that. I wasn't shocked at seeing Johansson in with regards, you know, as soon as Cairney's not, you know, straight away it looked like Cairney wasn't available. He wasn't on the bench either. And Johansson has played more advanced roles for Celtic in the past. And I know everyone seems to think he came in as a defensive midfielder. I never ever thought that. I always saw him as, you know, you've got McDonald, you've got Parker, you've got Tunnicliffe. Johansson is more of a, you know, it's him and Christensen. Must be him and Christensen who could play the same kind of role, players with legs and who can get forward and work hard. So it was interesting, though, to see him because, you know, you could have played, Cabano could have come in. You could have had Smith, you know, with two up and, you know, various options. But, in the end, you know, Johansson showed why he was picked. So, not shocked at all. The rest of the team was pretty much as I expected.
Yeah, the rest of the team pretty much picked itself, Mike. And let me ask you, are you surprised by the decision to play Tim Ream again? Instead of, we talked about the reasons why, talking about having someone that's left-footed. Now, you know, again, it's in hindsight now. Do you think that was the right decision? Because I still like Michael Maddle, but maybe there's something to having someone that's left-footed as part of that centre-back pairing.
I mean, I wasn't surprised. I know he made the mistakes he was involved certainly in the goals last week. But I go back to my sort of explanation of it last Friday's show, where I feel it's a case of a balance for the centre-backs. And a balance in the fact that Tim is probably the best of the three, if you exclude Callis, of actually, as a footballer, taking the ball out. And, you know, in hindsight, what did Tim Ream do wrong on Tuesday? I don't think he did anything wrong on Tuesday. If anything, it was, you know, Tim Ream lost the ball last Saturday, which led to a goal. When he made that pass forward. If you watch the first goal we conceded, the penalty, where Malone took the player down, it was Sigurdsson's mistake when he won the ball around about the centre circle, kicked the ball too far. Exactly.
Yep.
And I saw, you know, someone online had a bit of a disagreement with me. He blamed Tim Ream for the penalty. He said, you know, the ball was played into an area where Tim Ream should have been. And Malone was wrong-footed. And I said, totally disagreed, because I said, if you look at the replay, you'll see that Sigurdsson pushes the ball, he's out of position. Tim Ream then picks up Jerome and tracks him all the way back to the centre-back position. And, you know, the ball takes a while to get forward, but Tim Ream, absolutely no problems there. And again, with the second goal, you know, people saying, well, it's at the back post, it should be Tim Ream's ball. Again, you watch the goal and as it's played out, Adoee goes for a header, fails to win it, and he's out of position. Sigurdsson runs forward, then runs back. And when the actual cross comes in, him and Sigurdsson and Ream have swapped over. So Ream is actually at the near post with his man. So we're a bit of sixes and sevens. But the second penalty, you know, Malone he should be goal side. He should be a foot or two away from him. He should not have his hands on him. And, you know, as somebody who's played defence, if you're the wrong side, you've got your hands on a player and the ball comes in, doesn't matter whether it's 10 foot in the air and the player decides to go down, you're giving the referee a decision to make.
Yeah.
You don't touch him. You stay goal side, attack the ball if it comes in. The ref's got no decision to make. So it, the second one, completely Malone's fault. Yes, he went down easy, but that's a striker's job as well, isn't he? I mean, you know, you can call him a diver, whatever, but Malone gave him the option. The first one, Malone's Mike, flat-footed a little bit. Yeah, go on.
No, I was just about to say, you know, you're jumping ahead, and honestly, I'm glad that you did, because I think you gave a great analysis to that second penalty, because I've watched it several times, and it's about positioning. Like you said, he did not have the right positioning, so he gave the ref no alternative, and I think he dived. Again, I'm not there, but I watched it several times. I think he dived, but he gave him the opportunity to dive, and that's what you explained, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean that is the thing, you know. And the first one, yeah, that, you know, that was, for me, that was a penalty. He's wrong sided. It's a silly tackle. Would he have got the cross in? I'm not so sure. But you know, we were backpedaling all the time there, so it's unfortunate for Malone. He went from the hero of last week to zero this week. you know, but second half he gave it his best effort. And I think Jokanović has to take a bit of praise here. So there's been criticism that Jokanović likes to chop and change the side. He didn't really do that the other day. It was because of injuries he made a change. What you had there was Tim Ream having a, you know, at mistakes last Saturday, but kept his place. Then you have Malone, who made two bad mistakes in the first half, gave away penalties. What were fans? I mean, you were probably watching, reading Twitter more than me, or seeing the online forums. I bet it was get Malone subbed, get Session on. And but to be fair, he kept Malone on. I don't think Malone had a great second half. I didn't think his crosses were as good as they should have been. But he showed faith in the play. He didn't destroy that player's confidence.
That's a great point.
By taking him off at half time. Jokanović got a lot of criticism for taking Johansson off after half hour on his debut, and I think we saw that knocked his confidence for the next couple of appearances. So I think Jokanović, man management wise, has to take some praise for the way he treated Malone the other day.
It's a great point, Mike, and I was actually speaking to David as well offline, and I said the one thing that actually encouraged me was that Malone could have easily, you know, had his head drop and not continue to play. Well, he continued to play. Did he play well? Like you mentioned, maybe not great, but he kept playing. He kept trying to be part of the solution to getting goals and doing his job. So that is something to think about, you know. And I was thinking about this, and I know it's a different position, but the fact that he's aggressive, Malone, Mike, I think is a positive. There's a downside, because we've seen the downside. He's an aggressive player, and I like someone that's aggressive, because I think more often than not he's going to make things happen. He's done that since he's been at Fulham. He had two major mistakes here that cost Fulham. Let's call it what it is. But he kept playing, and like you said, the manager kept faith in him, and that probably also allowed him to keep playing. So that's the positive to come out of it with me. You know, I was thinking, well, what if Jazz Richards was in this situation, Mike? And I know we like to pick on Jazz, but if this happened to Jazz, and it did happen to Jazz, Jazz is a very conservative player, and he would have just basically been the same type of player that he is, whereas Malone is an aggressive player. So I'll go with the aggressive player that continues to try to play, Mike, than someone that's going to play scared. He wasn't playing scared.
No, it's a good point. And, you know, he continued to go forward. But like I say, I mean, I still think his crossing wasn't great. But he was involved in all of that possession we had. And he was one of the main outlets. And, you know, in that second half. And, you know, deserved to stay on. And, you know, we talk about my ratings that we do where the fans vote. And I thought his ratings were more indicative of his first half to penalties he gave away than his overall performance. I thought it was quite harsh, but you know, that's the way it goes. But I don't jumping ahead, you know, it's going to be an interesting decision on, who plays at left back tomorrow.
It definitely is, Mike. We're going to be talking about that a little bit, like I mentioned to you. Dave and Holly were talk about that and a couple of other positions. There are some very interesting decisions for Slavisa to make for the Aston Villa match. All right, Mike, you pretty much went through talking about the two penalties, so we're not going to really go into any more detail about that in the first half. You also had the opportunity by Sonny Aluko in the 27th minute that just goes wide. It's deflected. That was unfortunate. That was actually pretty close. And then at the end of the half, you had the opportunity by Martin. But Fulham go into the half down 2-0. And, you know, what's funny, Mike, because now we're going to transition to the second half. You know, there are obviously two ways that this can go. They're going to be in for the fight, and they're going to try to fight their way back into this match, or it's going to go in the other direction, meaning their heads drop, and it becomes 3-4-5-0. Well, thankfully, it went in the positive direction for Fulham. You could see that very early on. Just want to mention, early on in the second half, you had Adoy going off, and you had why am I blanking on him, Mike? Why am I blanking? I can't believe I'm blanking on him. You know who I'm talking about. Came on. Why am I blanking on him?
Yeah. Fredericks.
Oh, God. Boy, that is a serious Goldman. Fredericks comes on for Adoy, and then in the 55th minute, after sustained pressure by Fulham, you have Chris Martin taking a shot. It's deflected in off of Johansson. But again, this was really more to do with Chris Martin. And then 10 minutes later, you really have the wonderful goal by Chris Martin. And I definitely want your thoughts on that. And just take us through what you saw through your eyes in the second half. Like you mentioned, you have that 20-minute period when we were on top.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, pretty much from the kickoff second half, we came out very determined. The crowd, for once, you know, the cottage under the lights, it's dark, got behind the team. It's not been a great atmosphere. It's not been, you know, good results at home this year. But the second half, we got behind the team. And I think, you know, they showed the effort. They showed, you know, that they wanted to get back in. And I think Norwich were caught a bit flat-footed, a bit, you know, what's happening here? And it was, 20, 25 minutes of that second half, we were all over them, as they say. And, not enough shots on target, but, you know, Martin was involved a lot. He was laying off, you know, chests, headers here and there, Aluku getting involved. But I go back to Pearson and Johansson, their work rate, their hassling, their anticipation, they're nicking the ball, you know, led to both goals, really. And so pleased for Martin to score. I mean, the first one, you know, it's his shot. It does deflect off Johansson. It does. That's the reason it goes in. But, you know, his second one was you know, really good finish. And he's finally showing what I certainly you knew, Russ, from following, you know, watching a lot of Derby and, you know, listening to Anthony Buckley-Taylor and, you know, everyone else involved there, what he can offer. And, you know, him, people who say, oh, it should be Smith or, you know, not Martin, you know, they, I'm going to say it, they're clueless, because Martin is by far the better footballer. And, yes, it's taken a while to get going, but he showed the other day he is key to us, really getting the busy bee midfielders, as I always call them, being involved. And Pearson is an absolute revelation, really. You know, he came with a reputation from Reading, you know, on loan via Reading, I will say, of being a bit lightweight. But actually, I think he works really hard. He tries to make the tackles. He hassles. There was a moment in the second half where he absolutely chased the ball from virtually in front of me in the Johnny Haynes stand all the way over to the far side. And I think he ended up giving away a corner, but you know, he hassled all the way across the pitch, and you know, his work rate was second to none. But second half, yeah, when we thoroughly got back, you know, deserved to get back in, should have took the lead probably, and then we had the 10 minutes near the end of the game, or before the 90 minutes anyway, where Norwich were getting back into it. They made a couple of subs and, you know, they took off Houlihan and Brady, two of their most influential players. And that tells you, you know, they weren't getting, we weren't allowing them to do what they have done to other teams. So, yeah, go back to what I said earlier. We come out of the game with a lot of pluses, a lot of headaches as well for the manager. And, you know, onwards and upwards, hopefully, and starting with Villa tomorrow. But overall, I'm not going to knock any player. The second half performance was intensity-wise, the best of the season.
Okay, very good, Mike. Before we go on any further, I want to go back and I want to talk about the 20-minute spell and PA's on specifically, because I don't think that they get the – well, I know that they don't get that second goal without his determination. That's what you're talking about, his determination, winning the ball, then eventually gets to Johansson, then to Martin. That, to me, is what Fulham need to continue to do. If they could show that, then there's no reason why we cannot – be challenging for top six. It's that determination, Mike. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's also a different type of hassling, or we do our hassling and pressing in a different place to other teams. So you watch us play, Button have the ball, and the other teams seem to go right on top of us. We don't do that. What we do is we allow them to have the ball, and then they look to pass it to their more advanced defenders or deeper midfielders. And then we hassle. You know, it's almost, you know, let the ball go to their midfield first. And then Pearson and, you know, Johansson will hassle, look to break up their play, pick up the odd ball, and then run directly. And for me, the positives from the last two games I've watched is our direct running. That's what Pearson and Johansson do. They're two very positive players. And I think that comes across even more when you watch a video. You know, I watched the 90 minutes again yesterday, and they win the ball and they're directly running towards goal.
That's right.
And it, you know, it's a case of, well, keep up with me, and and that's great to watch. And you know, I will be critical. You know, I will be critical of Parker for slowing the game down a lot, but he has been so influential recently. It's very difficult for me to do that. But we must all agree that he is someone who will slow the game down. And maybe that's the balance we need. Maybe that's what he brings, is that, you know, this will just take a breather. Let's just slow down. But there are times, certainly in the last third, where, you know, Pearson and Johansson shine above him and you know, and show what we can offer. And this is without Cabano on the pitch and Aiti.
That's right.
You know, Bozabad, who's disappeared and no one quite knows where he is. You know, rumours flying around, who knows whether they're true or not. And this is what we all hoped for from the beginning of the season, pace and movement. And it disappeared in September, but it's back in October.
Absolutely, Mike. And I'm glad that you talked about Parker, because I'm frustrated by some of that slow play. But like you said, maybe it's about the balance, getting the balance right. And I think I heard or read somewhere where Savisa was talking about getting the balance. So maybe that's what he sees in Parker. And Parker, listen, has been playing very well. And so that might be what that's all about with him, just being able to strike that balance. All right, my friend, let's go to stats. Let's do this real quick. Let's start with possession. Fulham had 60 to 40% possession advantage here. Total shots, even at 12. On target, shaded by North City, 4-3. Corners, shaded by North City, 9-8. Crosses, 10 more for Fulham at 29-19. Tackles, even at 13. Let's go to attempted passes. 504 to 338, Mike, in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, this is a good stat. 210 to 132 in favor of Fulham. Mike, I know you like this stat. Passing accuracy, 76% for Fulham and 69%. I know you want that to be a little bit higher, so that's something to look at. Accurate passes, 386 to 234. Aerial duels, 16 to 13 in favor of Fulham. Both of those were in favor of Fulham. Fouls, interesting, 22 for North City, only 8 for Fulham. Okay, Mike, what did you learn from the stats I just shared with you? What stands out?
Yeah, so, you know, shots was even, 12 each. We had shots blocked, you know. I mean, Norwich did – We didn't have anything really on target in the first half.
I forgot
half,
to mention that one. You're right.
Yeah, no,
we
so
had five
blocks. If you're just looking at, you know, shots on target first half, it was zero. But the fact is, Norwich threw themselves at the ball all the time. We got a number of corners from that. So, and I can see that from where I sit. I'm down that end, if you like, in the first half. So, you know, we're trying to get the shots in. But I'll go back, as I do most weeks, and go to the passing. You have Norwich, good football inside, second in the, top of the table. And 338 passes to our 504. Accuracy-wise, we're 77%, as you say. But attacking passes, again, 338 for us. You know, almost 70% of our passes are attacking-wise. 29 crosses, Russ. I didn't hear you mention that. 29 to 19.
I did.
Again, we're, all right. So, again, criticised for being too narrow in the width. But, you know, you can't moan about almost 30 crosses in a game. And then you look at our long passing. 50% of our long passing is accurate. And that is, you know, that's telling you that whoever's going up for the ball, Martin, it's not all about heading it. I think where you have Smith, it's all about heading it. Where you have Martin, it's chesting it. You know, it's chesting, heading, touching it. And he gives you a little bit more of that option. But so for me, it's all about the passing. And we're mixing up a bit more. So still 77 long passes. Norwich 75, so very even. But percentage-wise of our total passing, that's higher than it was in the first couple of games where, you know, we're knocking it about at the back for, you have it. And instead, we're being much more positive, which is good.
Absolutely, my friend. All right, let's move to the full man of the match. You do a poll. What were the results of your poll, Mike? And also, who's your full man of the match?
Yeah, I mean, the man of the match in the end was Chris Martin. And, you know, he's the guy involved with the goal, so they're going to give it to him. I'm not really going to stray too far away from that, but I did think Parker again played well. I thought Johansson was excellent, and if I was going to put money on it, I would have gone with Johansson because I just felt that he ran himself into the ground and made such a difference. He's not a Kearney. He's not going to give you that kind of nice passing that Kearney can produce, but his work rate is second to none. And another thing about Pearson and Johansson is they get in the box. You know, the amount of times you get down the wing and it'll be one striker in the box. These two guys, they get in the box as well. And that's the biggest criticism I have of us recently is, you know, we don't get three, four players in. But these two guys, they can get in there. And that's something people like Kearney, you know, Christensen, if he plays, Hazabed, they need to look at. That's what they need to do is help the striker out and get bodies in the box.
It's a good point. So do you have Martin as your man of the match?
No, I'm going to go with Johansson, actually.
Just
his work rate. Yeah, no, I'll give it. You know,
very good.
Rate.
Very good. I like that, Mike. All right. Let's now go to Slavisa. Let's give a rating for Slavisa. You talked about some of the good moves, but you also mentioned that the team did tire near the end, so maybe you might peg them down a little bit on your rating. But I'm curious, what would you give Slavisa for this match, for managing this match against Astonville?
Well, there's lots of things. The only negative, well, there's two negatives. One, I wasn't overimpressed, as you know, with McDonald and Parker starting, but, you know, in the end, we've got the point. Yes, I do think he maybe should have made another sub, maybe on about 80 minutes. I think it's very adventurous bringing Fredericks on very early. But yeah, just felt another player should have come on. But you've got to give him eight, haven't you? You know, we played the league leaders at home, 2-0 down to goals that really weren't his, you know, you couldn't say it was his fault, you know, for a selection. And then his halftime team talk again. You know, he's been criticised. You know, we're one half side. You know, be it the first or second half. But whatever he said at half time, he got them going, and you know, saw an instant reaction. So yeah, I'm going to give him 8 out of 10 in a game where we were 2-0 down, and we could have won in the end.
Absolutely, Mike. Very, very interesting take, and I understand why you gave Slavisa an 8 for this match. All right, my friend, let's move on. Let's now go to Ask the Co-host. I have more than a few topics for you, so we're going to go through that. Some very interesting ones. Let's start here. This is actually a two-parter, so I want to get your thoughts on both of these parts from Gary Cooper. He writes, how do you think Fulham FC TV is going? With Kearney injured and his lacking in form at the minute, do you think he'll come straight back into the team as the midfield is playing well? Two very interesting questions for you, Mike.
Okay, so Fulham TV. Oh, dear. Anyone who's listening who goes on Friends of Fulham will know that there's been 3 or 4, 5, 10 threads about that. It's a real mixture. Some people accept it. Some people who, you know, absolutely against it, think every fan in the world is being stitched up. I tried to explain last week why the club were doing it. But the actual product, I thought last Saturday was a little bit mixed. I thought midweek was a bit better with regards to the actual 90 minutes and the commentary sound. You know, I don't know if you'd agree, Russ, you know, but and I think the interviews, certainly with Jurkanovic, I mean, yesterday's was 9 minutes long.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a new one. And we're also seeing, you know, I think there's shortened versions, but certainly the post-match press stuff has been good. I think what it needs to, if I was going to go, well, I'm meeting the club in a couple of weeks, so I'm sure they'll be looking for some feedback. They need to find a brand. Maybe they need, you might know a bit more, Russ. I mean, you know, maybe in America it's a bit more common that each club has its own TV. I mean, it happens over here, but you know, no one wants to watch Man United TV or anything else. But I think it needs to find a brand, its own voice, maybe. And I think it, instead of just being something that's behind a wall, which we're all paying for, I would look to try and build it into a brand. People hate the word brand, but
how about a show, Mike? How about a show? How about an actual show?
Yeah, something like that. They need to make it very individual and not just a rehash of what they've been doing over the last 2 years. I think make it unique. I think, you know, Sarah's obviously stepped back and they've given someone else the interview chance, and that's good. And there's a few other things I'd like to see, but for the first week's product, I think it's been okay. I know they've had a couple of teething problems, but I think it can only improve. And you know, it's it will be interesting to see if the club ever tell us exactly how many people are actually subscribed. But even the early doubters, I've seen that they've, I've paid my £2. Which shows people want to watch this stuff. They want to hear it, you know, no matter how they, you know, moan and groan about it. But it's the realities of a business in the end. And, I just want to see them improve it, make the production values a bit better.
I'm there with you, Mike. You know, it's funny because I was thinking of suggestions. You were just talking about one. Patriots, you know, my local team have an all-access show. It could be something similar to that. That's an actual TV show, but they could do something similar. They have a Patriots Today, which is basically just an update of everything going on today. It doesn't have to be long, but it's, like you said, it's a branded show that is every single day. They could do something like that. A suggestion I have is that, again, with the Patriots, they have coffee with the coach, sponsored by Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know if there's a tea sponsor, but how about tea with Slavisa, where you could sit down and talk to Slavisa about tactics, maybe. You know, not just about what's going on with the team, breaking down the other team, telling us what to look for with the upcoming opponent, you know, and maybe showing us, you know, the players, maybe show us some video of the other team, of what the fans have to look for, what Fulham need to do to win this match. You know, just, you know, he doesn't have to give any trade secrets. But that's just a suggestion I have, Mike.
Yeah, I think more product, you know, more information. I'd be surprised if they do anything pre-match, but certainly some post-match stuff, you know, Q&As, that type of thing. They need to be looking at that to fill it up. If it just becomes a bland sort of, well, here's another interview, here's this, here's that, then that will tire. Yeah, I just want to see a bit of individuality, something, you know, new, fresh, and if I was their marketing person, in, you know, or the person running that particular department. I would be looking at every club's website, every club's video feed, and looking at what they produce and pinching stuff, obviously.
And, oh, totally.
But then also putting your own twist on things as well. So So early days, but still, you know, promising, but loads of room for improvement and new ideas.
Okay, and the second part about Tom Kearney.
Well, it's a hard one, isn't it? Where does he fit in? After, on Tuesday, you know, who do you drop? You know, I suppose, you know, people have been saying you drop a Luko. Okay, so then you really are going to one striker on the pitch. You know, Kearney can play behind the striker, but that would be yet another different role for him. So depending on the injury and fitness of all the players, jumping ahead, I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the bench tomorrow.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. Okay, this question, actually, I think it's something that we need to do another show on, and I'll explain after the question. It's from Joe Smythe. Mike, be great if you guys could give a youth team update at some point. Who are the bright talents? How are the teams doing at different levels? What formation style are they playing, et cetera, et cetera? Mike, I think we need to get Frankie Taylor and do another show, my friend. But give us a quick synopsis of what you've seen so far from the youth teams.
Yeah, so my circumstances on a personal level have changed this year. So I'm finding it quite difficult to get to Motspur Park midweek. But certainly reading all the reports and talking to a couple of the guys ago who I would probably try and get on the show whenever we do one, maybe in the new year, Russ. Certainly the under-23 team are finding it a bit difficult. And, a couple of the guys having stepped up to the, first team squad, even if they're not actually playing that much. And then the youngsters, again, a little bit mixed. It's one of those years where there's been a transition of players. A lot of them have jumped a year. So they always find it a bit difficult. Whenever you look back, they always find it a bit difficult the first half of this season. And then once they settle down, you'll see us improving the second half. But, certainly scored a lot of goals. A couple of Scandinavian guys who are playing for us, Fornston, have scored some cracking goals. And for me, the really main thing this year is the amount of representation at international level our youngsters are getting, you know, both England and with other international teams. And that can only be good for our reputation when we're looking to sign youngsters and, for Fulham standing within the sort of football community as a youth team product. And, it's difficult for me to really go player for player. But at the moment, from the sort of outside looking in and reading everything, it's a settling in period for a few of the youngsters. And until they get used to the change, certainly in the under-23s, there has been quite a change in the way they're playing. But certainly at under-18s, where we've got 15, 16-year-olds playing in the team.
Wow, that's amazing. It's good signs, but it sounds like this year, like you said, Mike, I'm glad that you mentioned this, it's a little bit of a transition, so let's be patient with them, and we'll see how things go, but I'll definitely be in contact with Frankie, maybe me, you. And Frankie can do another show, like you said, beginning of next year. We can get an update on how the youth teams are doing. All right, Mike, I'm going to leave a topic from James Eade as the last one about Chris Martin. I want to end with that. So let's talk about, before we do that, let's talk about Dean Rozier's question. This is something that actually was on Frankie's mind, my mind, and on your mind. Mike, does he have any insight, this is to you, as to why LVC has been frozen up?
No. It's as simple as that. I really don't know. Beginning of the season, and from what I'm led to believe, is that he really likes Christensen. And, he was sub the first four games of the season, kept getting on, following instructions. But he just seems to have disappeared. You know, since the last cup game, he went off after about an hour. But he has played for Denmark since then. So is it an injury? No, I don't believe it is. And so you have him, you have Woodrow, both sitting out the 18s. And then, there's a couple of other players as well who can't get in here. Hazabad's another one. So Christensen, I have no idea. I mean, he signed that. It's the classic. He's in his last year contract. We get him to sign a contract extension, and then he gets dropped, which isn't a good sign. I'm as disappointed as anyone. I really want him to do well. I want him to be in the Fulham team, but he's obviously only going to do that when he gets picked by the manager. So when he does get a chance, he's going to need to take it.
Absolutely. It's a puzzling one. I'm glad that you brought up Yotabed too, because he's been dropped too. So I don't know what's going on there. So there are a couple of players, but specifically, I'm glad that that Dean brought up LVC. That's been a puzzling one. It's something that we're going to have to follow here on Cottage Talk. Okay, Mike, the last question that I have involves Chris Martin. But before I give you the question, I want to read some information to you that's also on the on one of the Derby County websites. I should say, I believe it's the Derby Telegraph, a poll that they did. And then some information from the Fulham website, from comments from Savisa about Martin, because I want to talk about that, just share that with you first, and then I'll give you the question, because I think they go well with each other. Let's start with this poll from Derby County fans. Basically, the poll was on the Derby Telegraph. Derby County fans want Chris Martin back from loan, and they have a tremendous amount of votes on this, Mike, and I believe the last time I looked, it was about 75% in favor of the fans of Derby County wanting Chris Martin back, which is a huge number. So that just tells you exactly what's going on there. In fact, yes, it says majority rules, 75% agree with wanting Chris Martin back. That's out of 4,573 votes, Mike. That's a huge amount of votes. So obviously the Derby County supporters want him back. Well, here are comments from Savisa Jokanović that you can actually see on the Fulham website. And this is about Chris Martin. Quote, he scored two goals, but he also supports us with the ball and is very strong in the challenge, and he collaborates very well with the team, Jokanović said. In the past, he's always scored between 15 to 20 goals in this competition and believe he is working hard. We are a team who creates things. We are a talented team. We are a team who creates chances. In the last two games, we scored six goals, and this is a different story to what we had before the international break. Then he goes on to say, he's going to stay with us this season 100%. Our intention at the beginning was to sign him permanently. Why we didn't, I can't go too deep into. We believe he's going to be an important player for us. I'm not interested in what the Derby fans are thinking. Let's ask the Fulham fans what they believe is better for us. I believe it's better for us that he is with us all this season. This situation is not going to change. Those are comments that you can read on the Fulham website from Savisa Jokanović, and that I guess is a little bit of a response regarding that Derby County supporters want Chris Martin back. Obviously, because I read a good amount about that, Mike. And the question from James Eade is, will Martin continue his run of form if he has found, or will we see him fizzle out once again? What are your thoughts about that, and also what I shared about Martin?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've said before that Martin scores his goals in batches, so I'm looking forward to the next four or five games where he gets a few more, and then he'll have a quiet period, but that's just the way he works. And it was good to see Jokanović. I mean, and you learn things from this type of stuff. It's an interesting. There's Tom Moore, who's a journalist for, I think it's Get West London. And sorry, that's my
that's okay, Mike.
Tablet making a noise in the background. And he writes for Get West London. Now he almost says the same thing in his article this afternoon, where he says that the Rams have the option to recall the striker, but Fulham, who have the opportunity to sign a frontman for $3.5 million in January, is what he says, has no intention to see him recalled to the iPro Stadium. And again, he says, Jokanović is quoted as saying, it's our intention to sign him permanently. So again, a lot of this goes back to, is Martin Jokanović's player? Well, from the quotes he's saying, it's clear that he wants him. and sees what he can do. And he knows he's a championship striker who's going to get you those 15 to 20 goals. And he's finally showing that that's what he can produce. But it's always interesting, these little snippets. So suddenly his fee is down from 9 to 3.5. So we can probably imagine it's somewhere in the middle. I suppose I've had this discussion with other people. It's a season-long loan with a loan fee, but that does not stop a team having an option to recall if it's been agreed at the time the deal was struck. So you could make a deal where we want him all season, but no, you're not having a recall. Or, yeah, we want him all season, and, yeah, you can have a recall. Likewise, we can send him back. So, you've got to have – it's always going to be a bit like that. So, but, of course, Derby fans want him back. They're near the bottom of the table. They've just got their old manager who – Martin probably scored more goals for than any other manager at Derby. And, even if the worst happens and Martin, there's a decision to send him back, we've still got him for the next 2 months, the next 10 games. So let's get the most out of him. But I think he's here to the end of the season when you look at what Jokanović has said.
I agree, Mike. I do. I don't see this changing. And that's why I wanted to bring that up, because I started to see this a few days ago. It started to build from these Derby County websites, the newspapers talking about it, the possibility of getting him back, and then, of course, this poll, and then I saw these quotes from Slavisa, which is basically trying to squash this, and I think he does a good job of basically saying he's going to be with us, and I believe him on that. I don't see Chris Martin going anywhere for the rest of the season. Like you said, we'll have to wait in January, but I truly believe it's going to be at least until the end of the season. All right, Mike, it's now time to talk about this match tomorrow against Aston Villa, Villa Park. Let's start here. Let's start with some comments from Steve Bruce. I want to start here, get your thoughts on this, and then I'll give you some more information on Aston Villa. This is these quotes are right on the Aston Villa website. It says, on form, this is what Steve Bruce had to say. They're unbeaten away from home. They've won 3 and drawn 3. When you look at their team, they've got a little bit of experience. We all know Scott Parker. I've managed Sonny Aluko, and he's a threat, as is Chris Martin. Tom Kearney is a very, very good footballer who I worked with at Hull. He's done very, very well for them. They're a good side. The one thing we're going to have to do is be wary of them on the break. We can't be open as we were against Wolves in the second half, especially if we give them the space, which they seem to enjoy away from home. The onus is on us as the home team. They enjoy that because they're very good on the counterattack. We'll have to guard against them because they're a very good side. All right, Mike, is there anything that you can get out of those comments from Steve Bruce on what his approach is going to be tomorrow for Aston Villa?
Yeah, I mean, he's fully aware that I think what a lot of us have realised is that we're better away from home because other teams come on to us. If we have to break teams down, we struggle. So in a way, with a team that's struggling a bit, yes, they got their first win the other day, but all in all, I think we can see a sort of four at the back for Villa, 5 in midfield, whether that'll be 2-3-1 or 4-5-1. It'll be something like that. I think it'll be looking to strangle the game and stop us sort of... he's almost going to play it like an away team, I think.
Yeah.
Allow us to, have the ball and not give us space to break. Dave might ring in on this one. I think Villa's quite a big pitch, and so that will suit us. So I think he will look to reduce the amount of playing space for us, because again, another theory is that the Fulham pitch is too small and we're better at pitches away. I mean, there was an article on
that's interesting.
Cottage Confidential, wasn't there, last week about it?
Yep.
And and there was a lot of good stuff in that, so there might be some truth behind that. So I expect I'm going to watch a game tomorrow where it's almost we've got to we're going to be looking like the home side and they're going to be defending, because they just want to get points on the board, keep the Villa fans happy as well and and keep it tight. And he's a wily old character. His Bruce personally don't like him, but he's very, you know, very experienced. He will set him up in a defensive way, which is one reason I don't expect to see McCormack start tomorrow. And, you know, yeah, I think he'll go with the one up top. Try and stop us having that space to run into, which is what, you know, what we're good at, as he says.
Yeah. And it's funny, Mike, that's why I wanted to bring up the quote, because I think he kind of gave us a little tell of what his strategy is going to be. He's going to treat the match like he's the away team, and I think he's going to try to really strangle the middle and make it difficult on us. So you're right about that. That's what I got out of it. That's why I wanted to ask you. All right, now I want to share some information with you, Mike, quickly from WhoScored.com. Let's go first with where we are on the table. Fulham are currently 11th. We have 4 wins, 6 draws, 3 losses. We've scored 16. We've given up 17. We're on a -1 goal differential, and we are on 18 points. Villa, they have 2 victories. They're in 18th, by the way. They have 2 victories, 8 draws, 3 losses. They've actually they've scored 13. They've given up 14. They're on a -1 goal differential, and they're on 14 points. Okay, and just to give you some characteristics of them, Aston Villa's strengths, very strong at aerial duels and stealing the ball from the opposition. Their weaknesses, they're very weak in all of these topics: finishing scoring chances, protecting the lead, avoiding individual errors, and defending set pieces. They're very weak at avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. Their style, they attempt crosses often, they are aggressive. Opponents, though, play aggressively against them, and they rotate their first 11. So that's a little information about them. Real quickly, I'll give you some stats comparison, Mike, between the two teams. Possession, Fulham are currently second in the league with 57.3. Villa are 13th at 73.7. At, I'm sorry, 53.7. Sorry, I got that wrong. Shots, or did I get the – I got the possession right. It was 77.2. Boy, a couple of goal minutes right back-to-back there, Mike. Shots, Fulham are actually third in the league at 15. Villa are 13th at 12.8. Aerials, one, Fulham are 24th last in the league at 17.8. Villa are 6th at 23. Passing success, Fulham are still first in the league at 83.9. Villa are 13th at 73.7. Crosses, Fulham are tied for first with 23 per game, and Villa are tied for 5th with 21 per game. Through balls, Fulham are tied for first in the league with 2, and Villa are tied for 3rd with 1. Long balls, Fulham are currently 23rd at 68. Villa are last with 67. And short passes, Fulham are still first in the league with 484 short passes per game. And Aston Villa are 16th at 306. Okay, Mike, I gave you a lot of information there. What stands out to you about this matchup between Villa and Fulham tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you've got a new manager coming and he's going to have his own style. And so previous stats are slightly different. I mean, when you look at who scored stuff, I mean, it's an interesting, there's not a huge amount of weaknesses. You know, you look at Barnsley's last week, a long list of stuff. And the fact is they've drawn a lot of games. So I think when you're drawing a lot of games, you're just that little bit better than your position is. And I think Villa are, you know, they've never really been a bottom three side or bottom six. They're probably, you know, 10, 11, 12. So it's going to be a hard game, and they've got experienced players. Good thing for us is they've got a few players out tomorrow. And
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, but our passing is head and shoulders above most teams in this league. And I think that's, you know, that's where we're going to have to be at our strongest. And our work rate as well. And the Villa crowd, we've got to quieten them, get them upset and try and score a goal. I mean, I'll give you a horrible stat. We haven't scored in the first half hour in any league game this season. So, you know, it'd be nice
to
get
a... That's a horrible stat. That's a horrible
stat. It'd be nice if we can get a goal in the first half hour and take the lead in a game for a change. So,
yes.
And quieten that crowd. Because Villa is a, you know, it's a big stadium. They do have good support. And, yeah, it's going to be a tough game.
It is, Mike. And I'm just going to share a little bit more information for you because WhoScored.com does have some team news, and I'm glad that you mentioned players that are out. According to WhoScored.com, defenders Tommy Elphick and Micah Richards are both likely to miss out with calf injuries. Jack Grealish serves the second game of a three-match ban. And I think I also read somewhere that Albert Odoma, who's a very dangerous player who we've seen before, is a doubt for the match, but no one I like, he will play. Players to look out for, their highest-rated players, according to WhoScored.com, would be Jordan Ayew, Jonathan Kaja, and Rudy Gesheed. These are all attacking players to look out for. And then, listen, they also have Mile Jednak from that just came from Crystal Palace. They have some talented players. This is a talented team. And, of course, we haven't even spoken about one other player, Mike, before we go any further. I have to ask you about Ross McCormack. You don't think Ross McCormack is going to start. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But I've been asked this, so I want to get your thoughts. What do you think will be the response for him from the Fulham supporters?
Well, it should be, it should be okay. He shouldn't get booed. I mean, there is frustration that he probably took the money and left. But then, you can't forget all the goals that he scored for his last two seasons. And I would recommend reading a very good article by Dan Crawford on hammyn.com, where he talks about how fans should not boo Ross McCormack. And I, for one, will be disappointed. I mean, during the game, you have a bit of banter and that kind of stuff. But when his name's announced, whether it's starting, whether it's on the bench, he should, there should be a round of applause. I hope we don't see the, what does he do when he scores against us reaction, because let's hope he doesn't score against us. But it's not been a great start for him. And, whatever your personal feelings towards him or his decision to go to Villa, you've got to say thanks for the last couple of years, because we probably wouldn't be in the Championship without him. All you can do is wish him the best, but not tomorrow. But I hope the fans respect him, and it's not the Fulham way to boo a player who really produced for us. You know, he wasn't someone who came in and took the money and didn't put the effort in. Far from it. And he did repay that. So I hope that, the fans are proper Fulham fans tomorrow and don't boo him.
Yeah, when I read Dan's article, and I do recommend, like you did, go to hammyn.com and read his take on Ross McCormack, I agree with him. You know, if you're asking me, I wouldn't. Obviously, I'm not going to be there. I wish I was going to be at that match. I think he did too much to keep us in this league, and I respect that. I respect what he did. I know how he left. I know how things went down in the end, but I also respect the job that he did for us. He scored some very important goals for Fulham, and it's up to the individual person what they want to do, but I hope you don't, boo, but it's up to you. It's up to you, but I thought we would at least discuss that, Mike. All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this match. Who are your key players tomorrow, Mike, for Fulham?
Key player every game at the moment is Parker, isn't it? I mean, it's clear, you know, he performs, we perform. And if McCormack does play, then it's going to be the game of two strikers. You know, Martin has to continue his good form from certainly Tuesday night and, show what a good striker he is in this league. So for me, it's Parker and Martin are absolutely key. And the other key person, and he's a key person every week, is Jukanovic. He's got to get the team selection right and the tactics right. It will be third game in 8 days, just as it is for Villa. But, a number of these players have played in two very, it was a hard game on Tuesday. You know, should they be playing a third game in a row? So, will we see one or two little changes to a couple of the personnel?
Very good there, Mike, because that's going to lead me to ask you what the Fulham need to do to win this match. And we've already talked about the comments from Steve Bruce. You know, it's kind of, if I'm reading between the lines, it sounds like, and you agree with me, that they're going to be playing a little bit defensive here. So what do Fulham need to do to win this match? Is it be patient? Does it come from Jokanović with his lineup? What do Fulham need to do to win?
I think we need to be patient, but any chance we get, because I think our chances tomorrow will be very limited. It could be one of those games, unfortunately, at the end of it, where we're saying we didn't have a shot on target. So even if we just get that one shot on target, be it from a Luku, who, you know, had a couple of, you know, one decent shot the other day, but then another horrendous one, or Martin, you know, whoever it is, they need to get it on target. And because I think tomorrow is going to be a 1-0, hopefully to ourselves, but I don't see a lot of goals in tomorrow at all.
Okay, so basically it really is about just taking your chances and taking them well.
Take that chance, yeah.
Okay, Mike, this one's going to be an interesting one. We both have talked to our co-host, David Holly, talked about what to do with a starting 11. So let's look at this two ways. Let's look at it from your perspective, what you would do, and then let's look at it, what you think he's going to do, the decisions that he has to make, because this is interesting. He's got many decisions to make on the starting 11 tomorrow.
Well, yeah, I mean, firstly, Fredericks. I don't think he's fit enough to start a game. I mean, yes, he played 40 minutes the other day, but even Fredericks, that he's 100% fit, he struggles after an hour, and he's only just come back from injury. So I don't expect Adoy to get dropped. And I would expect Adoy to be right back. I don't see him changing the centre-backs in, you know, two games undefeated, individual mistakes at the back. But, you know, in the end, we've got those points. So I still think it would be Ream and Sigurdsson. I think a left-back decision, I would stick with Malone, but I would not be surprised to see Sessegnon come in, because he has chopped and changed those two guys, and maybe he feels it's time, you know, give Malone a break, especially after his first half antics, and give Sessegnon a go. Midfield, I think we will see Parker and McDonald an away game, and I see no reason to drop Pearson or Martin. So really, it's a case of, you know, does Johansson stay in the team, and does Aluko? And I think he's a fan of Aluko, so I see him staying. But with Kearney, he looks like he's fit. So the question, I think the toss up is between him and Johansson. As I said earlier, I think Kearney will find himself on the bench possibly tomorrow.
What would you do, Mike, if you were Savisa? Would you start Johansson because he played so well?
I think I would. Yeah, I think I would. It might be a bit harsh on Kearney, but he played well last week. It's a real tough one. It's a real tough choice. But I think I would go based on the second half performance. I'd want to carry that over. I'm very much a believer in, you know, if you've shown real application, you've played well, you don't deserve to be dropped. I mean, you can look at lots of other reasons why players should get dropped, but I think that would be harsh on those. So, yes, Kearney was injured. He got dropped. Might be harsh on him being a sub, but in the end, you've got to, you know, I think you've got to take it game by game and carry it over, and that's why, you know, yeah. It'd be a bloody good sub to have, though, isn't he? You know, if things are going badly or it needs to be changed.
Absolutely.
So, it's a squad game. Everyone has to, you know, take their medicine if need be, and sit on the bench. And one of the good things I like, and which is I go back to the team spirit, is I sit almost opposite the bench, and when that second goal went in, everyone was off it. So
that's
Matt
great.
Smith, who's in and out of the team, you know, Tunnicliffe, all these guys, you know, they're there. There's a real team spirit, and
that's
pleasing
great.
To see.
That's important, Mike. That's really important.
Yeah, exactly. So if you are made sub, you have to join in with that. You have to accept that is your position. And if rumours are true, and one particular player has thrown his toys out the pram and got upset at not being in the team, then he's the wrong player to have in that 18 at this moment until he buys into that situation.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. All right, let's move on to predictions here. I'm sorry, did you go through your full starting 11? I blanked out for a second.
I was sort of fudging it, but I would keep the same team, quite frankly.
Okay.
That started the other day.
Okay, very good. All right, let's go to predictions. Let's start with the Cutters Talk Twitter poll. which I did earlier today, had 126 votes. Win, 54%, Mike. Draw, 33%. Loss, 13%. Confidence is pretty high, my friend. That's very interesting. Let's go now to the Facebook page. And Brendan Cronin thought he'd be funny with me. Here's his prediction. I'm feeling confident, Russ. 17-0 to Fulham. Very funny, Brendan. That's very funny. Okay. Sean Collins, 3-1 to Fulham. Steve FFC Collins, 2-1 to the Mighty Whites. Colin Forknall, 2-0 to Fulham. Joe Smythe, 2-1 to Fulham. Andy Nguyen, 1-1. See what else we got. Steve Moore, 2-1 to Fulham. James Eade, 1-1. Jason Holmes, 2-1 to Fulham. Ryan Fulick, Fulham to win, 7-1. John Walsh, 2-1 to Fulham. Gary Cooper, 2-1 to Fulham. Martin Double, I like that. Let's see. Let's go to Gerald Graves, 3-1 to Fulham. And then I'll end with Matt Dudley, who happens to be an Aston Villa fan. He's a friend of mine. He has 2-1 to Villa. Sorry, guys, but I'm a Villa fan. McCormack and Codger to score. So that, I'll leave it with Matt's prediction. All right, Mike, over to your prediction. Who do you have tomorrow? What's your prediction for the game?
Yeah, like I say, I think it's going to be very tight, but I think we're going to win 1-0.
Mike, I wrote down 1-0. I'm going with Mike Gregg. We're not going to get the Mike Gregg hat trick, but we're going to get close. We're going to get close. And I'm going to say Chris Martin's going to score again, Mike. I think he's the type of player that if we have limited opportunities, I think he takes advantage of his opportunities. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's what he is. You know, he is a goal scorer, definitely. And he's probably the best finisher we have in the squad at the moment. So, I think it's going to be a really tight game. I think it's going to be an early goal and we hold on. Resolute.
Oh, boy, that would be crazy, Mike. If it's an early goal and we hold on, that would be insane. Okay. I'm just thinking about that. I'm thinking about all the stress involved with everyone there. An early goal and then we hold on. Okay. Okay, Mike, best of luck to you then. Best of luck, Mike. All right, Mike, final thoughts before we leave this show. Great show, by the way.
Yeah, no, really enjoyed it, Russ. I'd just like to, safe trip to everyone going up there tomorrow. I think there's about 1,200 of us. And hopefully the team will, you know, give us a performance. I think it's going to be a hard game, close, but only one goal in it, and let's hope it's ours.
I hope you're right, Mike. I hope you're right. All right. It is time to wrap up the show. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Mike. Have a great night and safe travels.
Cheers, Russ. Speak soon.
Okay.